take a moment and remember Brother Mel McGee in prayer. He's having a rough time breathing, so I want to remember him in prayer. Also, remember Brother Mark and Brother Jim's dad in prayer as he's having a rough time as well. Brother Art, would you lead us in prayer? We'd like to turn to the book of Mark, chapter 5. We've been looking at the healing miracles of Christ the last couple weeks. We've been looking at this demoniac of Gadara. We see that Matthew records this in Matthew chapter 8. Luke also records it in Luke chapter 8. And in Mark, he gives us the most detailed account, and he does so in the first 20 verses here of Mark chapter 5. Last week we saw several things about this man's disposition, several things about his behavior, all as a result of being possessed by a legion of demons, a very large number of demons. We saw that he, as you read through here, he was very unsettled, very restless individual. He was an individual who was filled with much sorrow. We see that he cried in the mountains day and night. We see that he was very irrational individual, that is, he cut himself continually. He was a very irrational person, a person who did not think correctly. He was also self-destructive, again, cutting himself over and over. We see that he was filled with anger. As Matthew records, he was exceeding fierce, or he was more than fierce, beyond fierce. We saw he was a moral degenerate. The fact that he wore no clothes, Luke specifically tells us that he wore no clothes. And we see that he was an uncontrollable individual. That is, man could not control him. They tried chains, they tried fetters. He would break the chains, he would break the fetters. So man tried everything they knew of to help this individual, and the truth is they didn't have what this man needed. They were unable to help this individual, and that's very true today. There are many things that we need to come to the realization that you and I cannot fix, that only God can fix, and there are many people that you and I cannot fix. Only God can fix them. And that was certainly the case with this individual. We see, to save time, we're not going to read all 20 verses. We've already done that. But notice verses 1 and 2. We see Christ arrives in Gadara. they came over unto the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gadarenes. And when he was come out of the ship immediately, there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. Again, society did not have what this particular man needed, but the one who did have everything he needed now arrives in Gadara. And I believe that Jesus came specifically to Gadara for this individual. We see that after he ministered to this individual, after he freed this individual from the demons, he went back to the other side, him and the apostle. So he's there for this man in particular. No doubt there were others who witnessed what had transpired, or at least witnessed the results of it, and they were affected. But the main reason that Jesus is in Gadara at this time is for this particular individual. So Jesus comes to Gadara to rescue this individual, to rescue this individual from sin, to rescue this individual from Satan. This man was enslaved. This man was in great misery. This man was in despair and agony. And Jesus Christ comes to Gadara to restore this man, to put back, to put his life back together. His life is wasted. His life is broken. And Jesus is there for this man. We see the man approaches Christ and the apostles there in verse 2. And as he approaches him, we get a picture in our mind from reading Mark's account and from reading Matthew and Luke's account. We get a picture of this individual. Again, he had been chained, he had been fettered many times, and he would break the chains and he would break the fetters. And I picture this man with broken chains hanging from his wrist and the clanging of chains as he dragged them along. We see he wore no clothes. He was naked. And we know that he cut himself with stones over and over. So we picture this man naked. We picture this man with scars, bleeding from his self-inflicted wounds. Perhaps there's dried blood on his arms and his legs and his hands. His hair is matted. His mind has been completely affected by sin and Satan. And we see we picture this man as a maniac, and he's wild-eyed, and he approaches Jesus Christ. But what we see in this man is a good picture of what sin and Satan can do to people. And then, of course, we have the account of what Jesus does for people. But in this demoniac, he portrays the condition of many. Because there are many lives that have been literally torn to shreds by sin and Satan. And certainly this individual fits the bill. Here's an individual whose life has been torn to shreds by sin and by Satan. And everywhere we go today, there are people whose lives have been devastated and ruined by sin. Devastated and ruined by Satan. And the world's filled with these individuals. The world's filled with individuals who are just utterly lost in a maze of sin. They go through life without any purpose. They go through this life aimless. And certainly this was the case with this demoniac of Gadara. And these individuals, again, you can come up with all the social programs that you want to. You can come up with all the government handouts that you want to. And you can come up with all the intervention programs that you want to. But none of these things can provide what these people really need. Because what they really need is only Christ can give. And that's so clearly illustrated in this miracle. Now we see in verse 7, the demoniac rushed towards toward Christ and cried with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God?" Again, the demons hate that name, Jesus. The demons fear that name. And the demons are speaking through this man as he rushes toward Jesus Christ. And I'm sure the disciples, all they saw was some wild-eyed maniac coming toward them. That's all they could see. But Jesus saw much more than that. He saw a soul. He saw a soul that was under the control of Satan. He saw a soul that was perishing. He saw a soul that desperately needed rescuing. That's what Jesus saw. And we need to learn. We need to become accustomed to not just seeing the outside of a person. We need to see a soul. We need to realize that there is a soul. There is a soul that is perishing. There is a soul that is headed for eternity. And again, many times all we see is the wild-eyed maniac. But there is a soul. And no doubt in my mind that when this man came toward Christ and the apostles, Jesus saw a soul. And again, it was this man that Jesus was there for. Now, Mark records in verse 15, after Jesus had freed this man of the demons, the people had heard how the demons had entered the swine and how the swine basically drowned themselves. And in verse 15, they come to Jesus and see him that was possessed with the devil and had the legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. I want to consider some things about the people. After this man was healed, consider what they saw. They had heard what had transpired, so they came. And it says they saw him that was, past tense, possessed with the devil. They knew it was him. They knew this man well. They'd seen him many times. They could hear him crying in the mountains. Everybody knew who he was. There was no mistaking his identity. And they knew that it was him. They saw the very one who before had his life controlled by the devil. They saw him who had his life controlled by the demons. They saw this man who in the past wore no clothes. They saw this man who in the past they could hear his blood-curdling screams many, many times throughout the day. They saw this man who they knew was bent on destruction, this man who was destructive to himself. And they saw this man and they knew that this is the one who was exceeding fierce, and he acted more like an animal than he did a human being. They saw this man whom no man could tame. They knew how many had tried to chain him and many had tried to put fetters on him. But they see him now and he's different. He's different. He is a completely different individual. He looks different. He is acting different. His attitude is different. It was like he was not even the same person, but they knew that he's the one. He's the one who lived in the tombs. He's the one we could hear crying day and night. He's the one who cut himself. He's the one who acted like an animal. And when they looked at him and they saw Jesus, they knew that something had happened that no one else could do. Something had happened that no one could explain. And that's how the world ought to look at us. The world that knew us before we were saved, they ought to know that something has happened. Something has happened. Something has changed them. And you can explain it to them, But the truth is, unless the Lord opens their eyes, they don't understand. And these people did not understand, but they saw this man, he's sitting. He's no longer out of control. He's no longer restless. He's sitting. He's very calm, very peaceful. I don't know if anyone had ever seen this man calm and peaceful before. But there he is. He's calm. And he's very peaceful. And it says, and he's clothed. That is, he was no longer naked. That not only shows a change in his outward appearance, but it shows a change in his mindset. He put clothes on. It was no longer immoral in his mind. So there he is. He's sitting very calmly, very peacefully. He's clothed, which means that he was covered modestly with clothing. And we see that he was in his right mind. They didn't have to run a test to see if he was in his right mind. They could tell by looking at him that this man is now in his right mind. He's no longer deranged. He's now able to think clearly. He's now able to think correctly. And the people saw this. And then notice what the people felt. There again in verse 15, Mark says, and they were afraid. The people saw this, and they were afraid. Lost man, it causes lost man to fear when they see a lost sinner changed. It causes some fear within them. And as these people saw such a radical change, a change that they really couldn't explain, a change that they certainly did not understand, but it was a change that they could see. There was no denying that a change had taken place. But instead of having their hearts filled with joy and praise and thanksgiving, they were afraid. They were overcome with fear. They were very fearful. Men tend to be fearful of what they don't understand. They tend to be fearful of what they can't explain. And that's why people get... If you're in a church service and the Lord saves someone, you can look around and almost pick out those that are lost by their reaction. They're scared to death. They want to get out of this place. Something has happened that is making me feel very, very uncomfortable. And they can't get out fast enough. And that's how we were before salvation. And that's how these people were. This is not unusual. And then notice what the people did. In verse 16, and they that saw it told them how it befell to him that was possessed with the devil, and also concerning the swine. So it was explained to them that Jesus performed this miracle. And they began to pray to him to depart out of their coasts. Began to plead with Christ to depart. Just leave us alone. Lord, just leave us alone. No one had the attitude of, oh, I want some of that. It was just leave us alone. And that's pretty much the attitude of the world. Someone who is newly saved, they may go to their lost friends and they may say, Lord, save me. They'll say, well, I'm happy for you. Just don't bother me with it, though. You keep that to yourself. And as long as you keep it to yourself, they don't have a real problem with it. As long as you don't manifest a real change, then they don't have a problem. But there's a problem here because there's a change that has taken place. But then notice also we see what the people saw, we see what the people felt, we see what the people did. Notice the change in this demoniac. Him that was possessed with the devil, past tense, he's no longer possessed with the devil. He that had the legion, no longer possessed. This man has been cleansed. This man has been changed. This one whose life had been so devastated, his life is put back together. He's sitting. He's no longer in despair. He's no longer in anguish. He's no longer out of control. He's sitting calmly. He's relaxed. He's untroubled. There's a tranquility about him. Again, you cannot see the shame. You cannot see the disgrace. He is now clothed. He's in his right mind. He's no longer living in the tombs. He's changed his dwelling place. He's no longer crying night and day. He's no longer cutting himself with stones. He's no longer in torment. He's no longer in distress. He's no longer in misery and agony. All the mania is gone. And it's all because of Jesus Christ. This man who was bent on destruction is a changed individual. And there he sits, and we see he is sitting at the feet of Jesus Christ. Now think about what this man felt. Think about what he felt. Think about what he saw as he sits there at the feet of Jesus Christ. He's seen Jesus differently than when he rushed toward him, pleading that Jesus would have nothing to do with them, him and the demons. But now he sits there and his view of Christ is completely different. His thoughts of Christ are completely different. And he feels completely different. And again, through the years, through the decades, there's been a lot of preaching on feelings. And it is true, you can go too far with feelings, and it is true that you cannot base your salvation on feelings. If that's all you can base your salvation on, you don't have much. All that's true. But some have gone too far. It is also true that when the Lord saves you, you do feel something. You do feel something, and you do continue to feel something. I would get very, very concerned with somebody telling me they were saved and felt nothing. You do feel something. And this man felt something. He felt unburdened. He felt a liberty that he had never felt before. And all the joy of feeling that liberty, and everyone whom the Lord saves, there is an unburdening. Because just prior to the Lord saving you, he burdens you with a load of sin. And then he saves, and there's that unburdening. And there is a liberty that you never felt before. And this produced a joy that this man never had. It produced a happiness and a gladness that this man had never had before. It caused him to have a peace in his mind that he never had before. It caused him to have an assurance that he never had before. And I believe he had a love in his heart for Jesus Christ, whom he was sitting with at this time. And no doubt there was a spirit of thanksgiving, there was a spirit of praise that this man had never, ever had before. He's thinking differently. His whole outlook is different. His whole attitude is different. All of his desires are different. Everything is different about this individual. Then notice what he did. We've seen what the people did. Then notice verse 18. When he was come into the ship, he that had been possessed with the devil prayed him that he might be with him. That's quite a different prayer from verse 7. Now he's praying that he would be able to go with Jesus. In other words, this man wanted to go wherever Jesus was going. Wherever Jesus was, that's where he wanted to be. And we see that Jesus instructed him, go home. No doubt it had been some time since he'd been home. And when Jesus said, go home, I don't believe he was telling him to return to the tombs. He was telling him to go home. And tell them, your family, your friends, how great things the Lord hath done for thee and have had compassion on thee. He was to go and tell of the Lord's grace. He was to go and tell of the Lord's mercy. In verse 20, and he departed. He did what Jesus told him to do. He departed and began to publish in Decapolis, 10 cities, how great things Jesus had done for him. And all men did marvel. And may I say that this man's witness was validated by the manifest change that had taken place in his life. Imagine this man if he had gone home. He's still got that rock in his hand scraping his skin. He's still screaming. He's still a maniac, still out of his mind and out of control. And he began to tell people, I want to tell you what Jesus has done for me. Well, they'd laugh at him. And that's what many do today. They talk about the Lord, but there's no manifest change in their life. And the world laughs and the world mocks. And you imagine this man as he began to approach his home, hadn't been there for some time. And perhaps people could see him in the distance. Oh, I think it's... No, it can't be. It can't be. And when he finally is close enough for them to recognize him, they realize that something great has taken place. And we see that he began to tell them what the Lord had done. Before you and I tell people of what the Lord has done, we need to make sure that our life does not tell something opposite. And this man had a life that backed up, that validated what he was saying. He was saying, the Lord has set me free. And you could see by looking at his life that it was so. People do great harm to Christ by talking and then not living what they say. The truth is, if you're not going to live what you say, please keep your mouth shut. Don't tell people you go to home church. Don't tell people you're a member here. Don't tell people how the Lord has been so gracious to you and how he's changed your life. If you don't have a life that validates that, you do far more harm to Christ than to the cause of Christ than anyone else. So we need to have a life that validates our testimony. Let's look to the Lord.